It is a state capitol report on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A bipartisan package of bills aims to improve the security of judges and to reduce threats. As the Wisconsin Supreme Court Marshal's Office documents threats against judges and justices in the court system, be part of the discussion. Call in with a question, share thoughts at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Paul Grimm is a professor at Duke Law School and director of the Bolsch Judicial Institute, served as a United States District Court judge for a decade. Paul, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
So the Wisconsin Supreme Court Marshal's Office reports 142 threats were directed at judges and justices in 2023. Are threats and acts of violence becoming more common for judges nationwide?
I think the trend that you just described in Wisconsin is similar to the trend that's occurring on the federal level, and I would suspect in other states as well. In 2022, the United States Marshals Service reported 311 threats that they had investigated and verified as legitimate threats. And in the first 3 months of 2023, there were 280. So if you have 311 substantiated threats in 2022 and 280 in the first quarter of 2023, you can see that that trend is pretty much what's going on across the country in the state level and also at the federal level as well.
You say substantiated threats. How do states go about reporting these type of statistics or keeping track of this, around the country?
Well, that's a great question because obviously the judicial system depends upon law enforcement agencies that are devoted to judicial security to be the ones who will look into and investigate threats and then determine whatever level of threat is involved and provide appropriate security. In the federal system, it's the United States Marshals Service. In a state system, it could be the state police. It could be some other security agency within law enforcement within that state. But of course, in order to do their jobs, they need to have adequate resources. And when you have that large a number of threats that you just made reference to, imagine the number of law enforcement personnel that have to be available to try to investigate. And then if you have one where there's a serious threat, and there have been many of those, and of course, Wisconsin had its own tragic events occur recently when retired Judge John Romer from Juneau County Circuit Court was shot and killed by a former litigant who he had sentenced to a case. And so it's not just that there are threats made, but that those threats are being acted on. And that's happening with increasing frequency as well.
Why do you think is the judiciary increasingly under attack?
So that's a great question. And it's a complicated question with a lot of different factors that have played out to get us to where we are. The first thing you have to realize, and this is the National Center for State Courts every year tries to have surveys to get a sense of what's going on. And for over a decade, public opinion in the state and federal judiciary, which has typically been very high, one of the highest level of public acceptances for the judicial branch as compared with the legislative and the executive. But it's been eroding over the last decade or so. It's tied at times to the public's perception of the Supreme Court. But what happens is that the most recent annual survey done by the National Center for State Courts found that you have to keep in mind that the overwhelming majority of the American population has virtually little to no contact with the judicial system. Hmm. So maybe they got a parking ticket or they had a domestic issue that got them in court or were charged with a misdemeanor, or maybe they served on a jury trial. But the number of jury trials in state and federal courts are really declining. So they don't have a whole lot of personal contact with it. So that's number one. Number two, civic education, which for years has been an important way of teaching through secondary school and then high school and college, people of the American public about their government institutions so that they have knowledge of them and respect for them has declined. And so we have a much greater degree of civic illiteracy. So efforts to try to help the American public understand the system. And third, we have to realize is that with political polarization occurring in state and federal, in the federal legislatures, it is something that you hear that almost all issues become, have an aspect of politics behind them. And when there are disputes, when parties don't agree, and legislatures can't pass laws that resolve issues, they go to the courts. And so the courts are being tasked with deciding cases involving the most controversial issues in our society. And when those cases are decided, when so many people are split 50-50 about things, you're going to have large numbers of people who are upset. But I think what really has caused the increase is the ability for social media platforms to pick up attacks on judges and judiciaries and to amplify them, magnify them, send them through social media sites that people tune into. And they're not necessarily accurate. They're not necessarily intended to be fair and balanced. They have an ulterior purpose. And finally, it's becoming more and more frequent for people who have been involved in litigation and don't like the outcome to go on publicly and personally attack and vilify the judge, not saying that it was a poor result and they would appeal and they thought they would win, but to personally attack. And you saw examples of that from former President Trump making many comments about the judges in his many cases. And just last week, Elon Musk, who had an adverse ruling from a chancery judge in Delaware that stripped away a rather substantial $56 billion salary package that his company had given to him, Tesla. And he referred to her as an activist and politician first and foremost. So when someone like Elon Musk says that and puts it out over X, which used to be Twitter, and people don't know much about the judicial system because they don't have contact with it, and they read things like this, then their thoughts and they lose respect for the judiciary. They get angry about a decision, and because
it's an entree for that behavior to be repeated elsewhere. I'm just going to take a moment here to reintroduce you, Paul Grimm, with us, professor at Duke Law School, as we discuss judicial security and many details and aspects of it. You can join in questions and comments, 800-642-1234. Paul, Republican lawmakers here in Wisconsin, they recently proposed a package that's aimed at curbing threats and violence. The bills propose restricting access to judges' personal information, like a home address. How do these measures help protect judges and justices?
Well, I think one of the things that they do, which is fortunate, is that when it's so easy to find out so much information about people by going online, when you can find the home address of a judge by going into the property records and finding the address of their house, then that makes it easier to, if you're upset, to try to go to their house and to do something there that would be either intimidating to the judge or possibly physically harmful. And Judge Romer's case, of course, is a tragic example of that. The same thing happened recently in Maryland, where a state judge was killed in his driveway by the aggrieved husband that didn't like a ruling that the judge had made in a custody case. So when you can't get that information and you can't then post that information so others have it, then it's a level of security that gives protection to judges that if they didn't have that would make them more vulnerable.
Paul Grimm, Duke Law School professor, director of its Bolsch Judicial Institute. Call in with a question, share comments, 800-642-1234. It's the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As state lawmakers circulate a bipartisan package of bills focused on judicial security, we examine what is fueling the threats of violence and its incidents directed at judges. Call in with a question. You can share your perspective at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We have Duke Law School Professor Paul Grimm, who's a retired U.S. District Court judge for the District of Maryland. Paul, one bill would ban protesting outside a judge's home with the intent to interfere in the judge's duties. And there was a legislative hearing in January where the bill's author said courthouses are the appropriate place to protest. Do you think, does the bill raise First Amendment concerns for you?
Well, anytime you have a bill that does something like that, you always have to balance the right of the public to peaceably assemble and to get redress for their grievances. And demonstrations, peaceful demonstrations that do not disrupt government services in front of courthouses and other public offices have been a protected First Amendment right. So the efforts to try to balance the need to have judicial security so that judges are not intimidated by having their houses surrounded by people who, even if they're being peaceful, being out there and having them present has an impact on that judge's feeling of security and privacy of their home. If you have it at a public place like the courthouse, that's sort of the public square that traditionally has been a greater area for protections of First Amendment. So you have to try to get a balance. It sounds like that's what the bill has tried to do. And of course, if someone wants to challenge it on First Amendment grounds, they certainly can do that. And it would go to a court to decide whether or not that balance was properly drawn.
Wondering if these threats are discouraging, lawyers from pursuing these positions. State Representative Ron Tussler of Harrison, who is an author of the bills, said in a statement that if judges are deterred from serving due to potential risks to their personal safety, the very foundation of our legal system is at risk. What do you make of that viewpoint?
It's a legitimate concern. The National Center for State Courts that I referred to a while ago had an article that they came out with recently about the state of the court addresses given by state Supreme Court justices, similar to the one that the Chief Justice does every year. Mm-hmm. And a number of those, the justices have commented that it's getting increasingly difficult to get as many applicants for judicial vacancies as they used to have. You already have a significant difference between what the judges would earn as a judge as opposed to being in private practice or even government service. So that's a disincentive for many because the best people who you would want to be on the court may not be able to afford the restriction on their income by that. And if on top of it, they believe that themselves or their families may be threatened, that will possibly deter. And some of the numbers reflect that there have been decreases in the number of really best qualified people applying. It's a correlation. Does it show causation? We don't know, but it is a correlation. And that's an observation, I think, that raises legitimate concerns.
There was a survey by Pew Research Center in 2022 finding broad skepticism among adults in the U.S. Supreme Court justices' ability to avoid political influence. How warranted are these doubts about the fairness of judges and justices?
Well, I think it's important to recognize that no one, and certainly not myself, is saying that judges are above criticism. They're public officials. They have very significant roles that they play, and they have a great deal of authority. But I think that what you have to balance is that the judges that I have seen and worked with, and I believe the overwhelming majority of judges, work very, very hard to try to not let whatever their personal, political, and social beliefs are influence their decisions. The key to keep in mind is that judges have to show their work. unlike a lot of other professions that just may come out and do something, judges have to explain their reasoning. And if you're a trial court judge, your reasoning is subject to being reviewed by an appellate court, and appellate courts are subject to being reviewed by the Supreme Court. And so judges show their work. You also have to keep in mind that judges are asked to decide the most contentious, disputed, and polarizing issues in our nation. And when you have a nation that's divided 50-50 on almost every topic, whoever doesn't like that outcome is going to naturally challenge the outcome and argue that it's politically motivated. But I think that judges, more than any other profession that I'm aware of, work extremely hard to make sure that they do not let their personal beliefs influence their decision, and they have to explain their judgments. And if you look at that, and they justify it based upon legal grounds, you can disagree with those legal grounds, but I don't think it's fair to necessarily turn around and say they're politically motivated.
And, you know, that just begs, because we have here Republicans asking for State Supreme Court Justice Jana Protasiewicz to recuse herself from hearing cases over state legislative maps. That is based on comments she made during her campaign, calling the maps rigged. So, you know, she refused to step aside, and the new election map redrawing, that process is underway. How could that type of partisan disagreement affect the judicial branch?
Yeah, it's complicated, I think, because in many states, their judges are elected. And the electeds are contested. Many, many years ago, when I first started, it was even in states like Maryland where judges were elected, it was almost never a circumstance where there were contested elections. It's very, very frequent now. And when you're in an election and you're running, and you're trying to you know, address the voters and convince them that you're the best candidate, you're going to say things. And so that's a complicating factor that you don't get in the federal system or in states where the judges are appointed. Each state and each in the federal government have judicial codes of ethics. They have clear guidelines about recusal, and cases that sort of set forth the parameters of when you should recuse and when you should not. And each judge has to decide for themselves. Initially, whether or not they think they need to recuse themselves, if they don't, then of course there are judicial disability mechanisms in every judicial system where a complaint can be filed, and you have others that can take a look at it. And if they believe that the judge should have recused, they can order that. So there are checks and balances there that apply in cases where. They might be close issues, but I agree with you. In states where judges are elected, you know, it would not be for the good of the public if they had such a gag order on what they could say that the public couldn't be informed about what the judges are thinking to make an intelligent choice. So it's, again, one of those lines. It's a delicate line to try to find the right balance around.
Talking about judicial security with Paul Grimm, professor at Duke Law School. You can join in questions and comments, 800-642-1234. Paul, what about the State Bar Association and you know, these associations' responsibility to defend against attacks on judges and on the courts? How should bar associations respond?
That's a great question. The American Bar Association has model codes. A model code of professional responsibility. Many states have adopted those code provisions verbatim. Some of them sort of modify them, but they're very broad-based. It's a good measure of what ethics obligations are on lawyers. And there's one, Rule 8.2, that deals with the relationship of the bar to the courts and judicial officers. And comment 3 to that says that lawyers are encouraged to fulfill their traditional duty of speaking out in defense of judges and the judiciary when unfairly criticized. Now, again, I say that no one's saying that you can't criticize the judiciary or judges, but when you make personal attacks on them, you've gone too far. When that's been done, it's been effective. So New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy, who was not pleased with a decision by U.S. District Judge Renee Bum, applying Second Amendment law and enjoining a state law that had been passed regarding gun control, referred to her as a right-wing activist. And the New Jersey Bar Association responded respectfully but accurately and pointed out that the judge had followed what the Supreme Court law was and tried to apply it, and that the criticism was unfair. And ultimately, the government came back, governor came back, and his office said that they respected the decision and that they knew that they were bound by it. They would appeal and that they meant no disrespect for the judge. So,
yeah. Well, Paul, thank you for that example. Thank you for joining us.
It's been a pleasure.
Paul Grimm, Duke Law School professor. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.